Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Thank you so much for finding the podcast, whether you're listening on your favorite platform like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you're watching on YouTube, or maybe streaming it at DB&A TV, dbandatelevision.tv, or the DB&A TV app on Amazon Fire, Roku, and Apple TV. You can watch nightly at 11 p.m. Pacific or 2 a.m. Eastern. Before we get to my conversation with Lena Nguyen, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Lena Nguyen is the host of the Consenting Adults podcast, and now is a good time to throw out the warning. We get into some grown-up topics in this episode, so put the kids to bed, okay? In addition to these not-safe-for-work topics she gets into for consenting adults, we chat about what her husband thinks about this new adventure in audio. We also discuss her 26 years in TV news. We live react to the Derek Chauvin trial verdict for the George Floyd murder and how she handled the transition from anchoring every night to being home with the kids.
When I left CBS, I really enjoyed not having to do anything. And for the longest time, I was like reacting with like joy at being able to take my daughter to volleyball practice or, you know, the kids picking them up from school, going to Froyo, that kind of stuff that most people kind of just take for granted, to me was such a luxury. And so I had a really good time just doing that, just playing mom. But I don't know if you're going to ask, because people ask me all the time, do you miss news? No, I don't. I'm relaxed. I'm not, you know what it's like to be in the news business where you always have to be on. You're always alert. You're always aware. You don't want to be like stuck missing something, right? Yeah. And so for once, I'm not like that. So I don't miss that. What I did miss was just like an interaction with people, which is why then I started a podcast. So I love talking to people. And so now, and I don't know if it's just an evolution of, you know, why I wanted to get into journalism while I was in it. And then now that I'm kind of out of it, but what I really wanted and what I really miss is just talking to people. So I'm still interviewing people. It's just not, you know, knocking on some victim's mom's door. It's not the awful stuff anymore. So I feel like I'm in a really good place. So I've got my podcast going on, Consenting Adults. Something very different from what I was doing.
Oh yes, it totally is. I have seen some episode descriptions and I'm like, did she get hacked? Is this right. Is this really what?
Yeah. So I'm doing that. I'm also doing corporate broadcasts. And 2020 kind of really pushed that into my lap where people couldn't host events that they were hosting anymore. And I was getting calls from these companies to virtually host events. And I'm like completely comfortable doing it to one camera, right? And feeling like I'm actually talking to people. So that pushed me in a direction that I wasn't really expecting. So that kind of fell in my lap. And I'm doing a lot of voiceover work, which I love. I've always said that like my dream job would be to do radio at home. Like, you know, where I don't have to change and don't have to put my makeup on.
Yes.
And so I'm able to do that right now. So it's fun.
You don't miss news. I get that. Mm-hmm. Is there an aspect other than the interaction with people of the news gathering, the storytelling, is that what you miss most?
Well, yes. But then, you know, looking back at the later part of my career there, I wasn't really doing that anymore. I was just reading scripts.
Anchoring, yes.
Right? Yeah. So when you anchor, you really don't have that creative control. I really wasn't telling any stories. I was just reading an introduction or a tagline, you know. So I really wasn't doing that. But I do miss that. I miss like asking questions of people that I think the person at home would be asking, right? And so that's what I'm able to do now. And I really enjoy that. And I enjoy the freedom of having, if, you know, if I run into an idiot on social media, I now enjoy the freedom to say, you're an idiot, which I couldn't do before, you know? So that's like, talk about freedom of speech. Finally, I'm able to.
You spent years and years not living in the comments because, A, many times people who live in the comments, the trolls, they're just trash.
Right.
And whereas now, and I'm just kind of like wrapping my head around this, because I still don't live in the comments, you know, but you're like, oh no, I totally live in the comments because I get to finally engage with those trolls.
Right. Well, every so often, and we know that, you know, you're not supposed to interact with the trolls, because that's what they're looking for, right?
Yes.
But every so often, there's a person who responds with something or says something that it so rubs me the wrong way. And before, I couldn't say anything about it. Like, how many cheeks do I have to turn? You know, now I can actually say something. I could put them on blast. You know, I can play them with it at their own game. And so that's something that I'm able to do now. And I don't have to think so hard about, you know, will work it mad at me if I do this, if I like this, is it okay?
Of all the spaces for you to turn to and you know, flex some creative muscle, why podcasting? I know you have a video component to it as well, but why podcasting?
Well, because I can do it without, and I normally don't have a video because of the nature of the podcast I'm working on now. A lot of people are anonymous, so we don't normally have video. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to talk to them like, you know, I saw you drinking something a bit ago. I'm able to sit back in my pajamas, in my sweatpants, and talk to someone, like have a conversation with them. I don't have to be on, which I really enjoy. And because of the subject matter, you know, I enjoy like getting people to open up and like reveal these secrets that their own families don't know. And I like this platform. I mean, podcasting, as you know, and it's only growing, right?
Yes.
Now, like people are making money and there's advertising and all this stuff. So, and I enjoyed trying to figure it out, like using a mixer and what do I plug where and learning all that, because you always have to be learning something. And it's been really fun.
So tell me about Consenting Adults, and why did you pick that particular topic for your podcast? I tell my students at Cal State Northridge, hey, if you want to get into podcasting, that's great. It needs to have a focus and you need to have consistency.
Right. Well, consistency is the one thing that really can make or break you. So right after I quit CBS, I did another podcast and I had a lot of fun.
Right. I remember that. Yes.
Okay. And it was like regular, normal, nothing taboo. Okay, you know, we talked about midlife career changes and financial stuff. So, you know, normal stuff. And then I sold my house. So then I broke down the studio and I stopped. Like, that's the worst thing you can do as a podcaster, is to stop.
Yes.
Anyway, so to answer your question, how did it come up? Well, I turned 50. I just retired from my career. Talking to a girlfriend about, gosh, how much I'm enjoying life. It's like, I feel so guilty. I am having so much fun at 50. And so she confided in me that she and her husband were swingers. And I was like, what? And like, it was someone I knew very well, but I didn't know that. And then I was talking to other friends and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we dabbled in that a bit. And oh yeah, there's a sex club down the street. I'm like, so there's this whole lifestyle that people are living. You probably know some too without knowing it, right?
Right.
And so in podcasting, you know that whatever you do, it has to be interesting enough to you, because it's going to be a lot of work, right, Aaron?
Yes.
Like, it's a lot of work. You better love it. There's a ton of podcasts about politics. There's a ton of podcasts about everything. There's not a lot of podcasting on a mainstream level about non-monogamy, about swinging, polyamory, wife swapping, all this really taboo stuff. So at least I knew that it was something in there that was, you know, like out of the ordinary. And so that's, and I pitched it to somebody. So it wasn't just me with a microphone and a mixer and able to get it on. I actually pitched it to a radio guy. He loved it, to my surprise. And so now I'm working with Bennstown and McVeigh Media on this. So it's, you know, it's like a real company giving me the platform to talk to people about this stuff.
As a married woman, then do you kind of look around and be like, all right, I'm talking about it. I'm getting all these questions about it. What do you say, hubby?
Oh, my husband and I have this agreement. We don't talk about it. He doesn't want to hear it anymore. In the beginning, I made him listen. I was like, honey, you've got to listen to this. And he'd listen and he'd like, so Denny is in healthcare and he's also a financial advisor. So he has like real jobs. And
real jobs. Yes, I know. Right. Everybody in news is like, most people are with or married to people with real jobs.
Real jobs. And this is so crazy. And he didn't want to hear it anymore. Like, I've stopped being surprised and making him listen to stuff. He's like, yeah, honey, could you just, I'm like, okay, fine. So he doesn't talk to me about his clients. I don't talk to him about my guests. But people assume, a lot of people assume I'm in the lifestyle, and I'm not. And I actually think that it's better. It's different from other lifestyle podcasts is because I'm asking questions that I think most people who know nothing about it would ask.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. The idea that if somebody knows you're in the lifestyle, then maybe they won't be as enthusiastic to talk to you about the lifestyle because you're in it. What do they have to share with you that you don't already know?
So, for instance, if you already know a lot about something, you may not ask the questions that the vanilla person at home is wondering in their head because you already know the answer. So I am still enjoying it because I'm still, my jaw still drops. They still say things that make me go, wait a second, what? I'm not jaded yet. And I hope I never get to that point because I don't know what my husband's going to think.
What was the first episode or what would you kind of point to as like, okay, wow, that shocked me more than I thought it would?
Well, you know, now that I've talked to so many people, I'm surprised that I know so much and that not much shocks me anymore. I did talk to a man who is in a cuckold marriage, and like, that's a thing. Okay, I've seen the word, didn't really know what it meant. And then I talked to this guy and he made it sound so normal. I was like, wow. And I love being in the position of, you know, learning something new and like getting out of my comfort zone. Like, okay, I used to think like men who wanted to be humiliated by their wives, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's sick. That's, oh, that's awful.
It's sick. It's sad. It's,
yeah.
It's,
oh, the poor guy. He demeaning. Can't get any, yeah. But he really opened the door to me understanding that actually it's just, it's a kink. And you know, what's kinky to one person may not be to someone else. So there's a huge spectrum out there and they're happy. So then now I look back and about how many married people do you know who aren't happy? Many, 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 many. And so I'm learning a lot more about communication and trust. And I think that a lot of people who don't know anything about the lifestyle are completely wrong in their perceptions of non-monogamy.
What are some of the perceptions they're wrong about?
Well, for instance, I found out that some of the swingers, there are a lot of nurses, cops, and teachers in swinging, which to me was like, what? And the more people I talked to, there are a lot of them. There are a lot of elementary school teachers who are swingers. I know you don't want to think about that. Next time you go to your parent-teacher conference, you do not want to think about that. But yeah, but you know, they're happy. They're not cheating. So they're not divorced. And I'm finding that a lot of people in their 40s and 50s get to a point in their life where communication's open. They don't care anymore, right? It's like, I trust you so much. I'm going to tell you these fantasies that I have. And I'm going to trust that it's not going to turn you off or make you mad or whatever. And it opens a whole new door. So I'm finding that there's people in their 50s, 60s, even older, 80s, who are swinging and they're having the time of their life. And that to me is amazing, right? So it might not be for you. A lot of it is not for me. But I love the fact that they are so comfortable with themselves and open with each other that they're able to find something that they both enjoy.
How do you find your guests, or have you gotten to the point where they are finding you?
Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, how am I going to get people to talk to me?
Right.
So again, COVID did this thing because it used to be in-person interviews. So it would be a friend to tell a friend, oh, she's, you know, Lena's okay. Yes, she's cool. You can talk to her. She's not going to burn you. But then because of COVID, we had to do everything remotely. So now I'm like, oh, now I can interview people without ever having to see their face, know who they are. But I'm finding a lot of people still share their real names, their faces, and they're normal, regular people. They're just not open about it in their vanilla, their regular lives, right? And because of social media, I am getting messages from people all over the world who want to talk about their experience. So they're finding me now.
That's a podcaster's dream, I would say. Just the idea that you've tapped into a genre and a niche where, you know, you get just organically shared and people are wanting to be on your podcast rather than you having to just knock on those email doors.
Right. And you, as you know, that part of the podcasting, part of the work is finding guests, scheduling it, right? Doing the interview. There's so much that goes into it. So when the guests find you, like before I even launched, you're going to think this is crazy. I had 20 episodes in the can.
I don't think it's crazy because as we're doing this, I have, I think, 7 or 8 in the can, another 6 or 7 scheduled.
Wow.
And I've gotten to the point where I am now posting episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays because I don't want to sit on this content.
Wow.
Especially because a lot of the content that I'm after, the conversations and the connections I'm after, a lot of it is timely.
Mm-hmm.
It's relevant, you know, to either the hate crimes targeting Asian Americans. The Dante Wright and now Adam Toledo and, you know, the Chauvin trial as we kind of keep an ear on that. So I totally am right there with you with the idea of, you know, just having all this content and not quite knowing, not what to do with it, but like, okay, well, when do I release it? How did you come up with your posting schedule? Yeah, we're just nerding out here with podcasting.
I know we are. I hope it doesn't bore people. Well, but so many people are getting into podcasting.
Yes, yes, and this is part of the decision to get into podcasting. When do you post? How do you post? What's your host? Right. You know, do you do video? Like I'm starting to do YouTube videos and IG, not because I want to go into that space, but because every platform promotes every other platform.
Right. I think some people make the mistake of, well, if I put it on YouTube, they're not going to listen and download my episode, but it doesn't work that way. It's all about marketing. It's all about pulling people in, right? I'm lucky in that my subject matter is evergreen. So what we're seeing is that people who are new to my podcast like it. They'll go back. So episode number one is like crazy number of downloads. They'll go back and they'll listen to it. So, and another thing about sex is it's like, it never gets boring. Everyone's story is different. And even if everyone's story was completely the same, it's still interesting to listen to. People like being able to listen like in their own head. Like you could be sitting there with your kids. Your kids could be watching TV. You could still be listening to a podcast. No one has to know, which has also helped us. Because I'm working with a company, you know, they do some of the work. I still do about 95% of the work.
The editing.
Just about everything, really. And I release once a week. Any more than that, like what I think you're doing is crazy. I don't know how you do it because I still have to Like, I think I still have to feed my kids and clean the house and do all these other things. It's so much work.
So what I end up doing is, my studio is in my late wife's closet, and the girls, ages 6 and 8, our daughters, they like to sleep in mommy and daddy's bed. And so 3 nights a week, they have gotten old enough and gotten to the point where they can just go to sleep by themselves while I'm in the studio working. And then the other 4 nights, I lay next to them and we all just fall asleep. Aww. So I do a lot of the editing, video and audio at night, 9 o'clock on. And then, as we talked about just before we started recording, I drag this computer up and downstairs. It's a desktop computer. I don't know what I was thinking, but I drag this computer up and downstairs so that when they're doing school time in the mornings, and you know, one's to my left and one's to my right, I'm in the middle editing audio and video and posting, and I'm in the virtual newsroom at CSUN. So it's like you said, if it's a passion, if you find something you're passionate about, whether it's the topic of a podcast or just podcasting in general, then you get into it because it is a lot of work, but it's so much fun. And I don't want to sit on episodes. I don't want to sit on content, you know, more than I have to. And that's fine. Let the dog bark. But I don't want to sit on content more than I have to. Because when I lost my job at KFI, where we talked for our podcast 2 years ago, I had probably another 8 or 9, maybe 10 episodes that never saw the light of day because I lost my job before I could post. And I'm not going to lose this job, but I don't like the idea of just sitting on content unless I have to, because maybe they've got a book coming out, or, you know, maybe I've got other, you know, more pressing content. I keep saying content. That's, you know, the buzzword, of course, the last few years.
Right.
But I don't want to sit on it unless it's timely and we got to put it out there.
Yeah. And you know, the reason why I had so many in the can was I just didn't want to get behind. I knew that I was going to be busy. So I wanted to make sure that I kept up my end of the deal always. Right.
How many once do you have now?
We're on, I think we just did episode 38. So fairly new, but the numbers are pretty amazing. And, you know, a lot of, like, I don't know how much you know about the number of downloads. Like, I didn't know anything. Like, you know, what's a successful podcast? It's not the same as TV. It's not the same as likes on social media. And everything is kind of different. But something happened, Aaron, where one day, like, well, maybe in a matter of a couple of days, we went from this to like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't like, did I do anything different? You know, I'm trying to figure out what it was. But in the beginning, I was like, you know, okay, let's try to get to 1,000 downloads in the first 3 weeks of posting it. Right.
Right.
Now it's easily 1,000 downloads in the first 2 days.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It just happened.
That's great.
So I don't know what it is, but it's so exciting to be able to, you know, see the growth and be able to test out, you know, if I do a video tease, you know, what does that do to the numbers? And you
right.
know, so, yeah, it's
fun. And this is one of the first times in your career where, yes, you've signed on with a company to help, but it's all on you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You don't have a team around you, you know, feeding you all this information, giving you scripts and everything like that. No, it's all on you.
Yeah.
And that's empowering.
And I like the fact that I'm pulling from my TV career because I'm doing things in my podcast. And when I told them, they're like, oh, that's interesting. We've never done that before. And it's working great. You know, like the teases that I do.
Right.
You know, I do like a little scissor reel in front of the podcast so that you all the good stuff first. Right. And then, okay, now I'll listen to the rest of the episode. And then a little tease for the next episode, which people don't always do for their podcasts.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's me bringing my TV, my teasing background.
I like the idea of the sizzle reel. I'm trying to think if I have enough time or energy in my life to put that together, but I might be able to incorporate that. But by and large, I can't do that tease at the end of an episode because I don't always know who
What's
I'm going to post in the next 48 hours.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because like, again, with our conversation, if we all of a sudden start talking Chauvin out of Minnesota, because right. that trial has come down, you know, they were supposed to read it a half hour ago.
Right.
If that comes down and we get to talk about it, then maybe I'll just post this tomorrow, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, but, and of course you and I have such extensive news backgrounds that we can't help but talk about news. And there was and is an aspect of news in the last 12 to 15 months that directly and personally affects you. And we've brought it up already, the hate crimes targeting the Asian American community. If you could just briefly, you know, your thoughts on that, your thoughts on the news coverage of that.
I was surprised at some of the comments I saw on social media of people saying, what? Like, there's no such thing as Asian hate. And these people were serious. And they were saying stuff like, I've never heard of that before. Well, of course you've never heard of that before. And that's why coverage is so important, because if people don't experience it themselves, if they don't hear about it, if they don't see it, they don't think it exists, which is a little ridiculous, but, you know, people, right? I was really, you know, stereotypes exist for a reason. All of them do. They came from something. Asians in general keep quiet about that stuff. Like, we don't make a fuss over things. I used to joke that, you know, when Asians lose their jobs, they don't play the race card. They just go out and get another one. That we don't make a big deal out of things. But it's gotten so bad. I like seeing the younger generation. And I think it's because of the younger generation, the people who are, you know, okay with speaking up. Because I think that even the people who are being targeted now, like the older people, they probably would not talk about it. They probably would just stand back, try to get past it, not expose themselves more. They're always afraid of retaliation. So if it wasn't for the younger Asian American population who are out there pushing it, drawing attention to it, this problem may not come to light for, you know, who knows how many more years. I don't know how many more people have to get hurt before the topic gets brought up. So yes, it's been very sad to see some of the stuff that's happening. But again, if it didn't happen, we wouldn't be talking about it, right? So there's really, it's just time. And I'm very careful not to, I don't believe in, like, you know, I don't like the cancel culture stuff. That bothers me. And I'm very careful not to, like, not everything is a hate crime. I know that. Just because the victim is Asian doesn't mean that was an anti-Asian hate crime. But it is happening. And I think it's the media's responsibility to put it out there, but do it in a way where, I guess, I don't know if I'm just cynical now that I'm out of the business. Sometimes I see some coverage and I'm like, oh gosh, the way they cover it is just, and I think it diminishes the issue. But I'm just really proud to see that Asians are speaking up, right? And I'm even prouder to see, like, you know, some of my Black friends and my Hispanic friends, like, standing up with us and beside us and helping us, you know, get it out there, because we can't do anything alone.
How have you talked with your kids about it?
My kids, they're very mature for their age. And I'm very careful to explain to them that, one, you don't want to be the victim. So you have to be strong. You have to stand up for other people and you have to stand up for yourself, but don't come from a place of, well, I'm the victim, right? That you want to help move things forward. I try not to give them too much, you know, being in the, I'll tell you, when I was working in news, my son at the age of, I mean, very young, was having these night terrors, and he would wake up and you know what he would talk to? he would talk about Kim Jong Il at that time, wanting to blow the world up. And I never told him this. So it was him listening to the news in the background. And I hated it. And so I tried to not let them listen too much to the news.
How difficult was that, considering it's like, well, I want them to be proud of what mommy does.
Right.
But I also don't want them to consume too much of it because, 95% of it is bad.
Right. It's all bad news. So I just, my TV at home can't be on the news. They didn't really watch me a lot because I worked prime time and, they were young. It's interesting. People think that if you're on TV, your family must watch you all the time or whatever. Like my parents don't want to watch me. it's a career and it's a job, but we try to still separate that and live somewhat of a normal life. Otherwise, I would be the parent who's like worried about everything, right? Because you see so much bad stuff. Like you want to protect your kids from everything. And I've had to really kind of stand back and say, okay, not everyone's a child molester. Not everyone's a murderer out there. You really have to separate yourself from all the crap that you deal with at work.
And what about conversations with your parents?
Oh, my mom would be so... The good thing is they never lived in the town that I worked in. But when they visit, they're so concerned. Like, why are you talking about him that way? What if he comes after you? When I covered crime, which in LA, that's about all that I covered, crime and celebrities. And I just tell them, it's like being a cop. Like you don't sign up to be a cop to sit behind a desk. This is fun for me. I like going out there. I like going to these neighborhoods. I like talking to people. And just turn the TV off. That's pretty much what I tell my parents.
And what about from the standpoint of the hate crimes targeting Asian Americans?
Oh, my parents are in Vietnam right now, and they've been stuck there because they were supposed to fly back, and then COVID happened, and a whole thing. Yeah, so they're still in Vietnam. The news that they watch, the stuff on Vietnamese media, makes it sound like it is not safe for an Asian person to step outside of their house.
That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I've not been able to really talk with anybody who is watching news overseas, coverage of what's happening in the U.S.
Right. And so she will send me a link to a news video thing. And I just tell her, I said, it's not that bad because the coverage is, Asians aren't safe in America. And I have to really tell my mom, yes, there are more incidents, but these are isolated incidents in some areas. It's not that bad. But we know in the news business, it's like, that stuff sells. People, as much as they complain, like listening to bad stuff. So they're very worried. And I'm just trying to tell them that news coverage isn't always, the way things are.
Speaking of news coverage, we do have a verdict.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, the Derek Chauvin trial, guilty of second degree unintentional murder, which I think was the, guilty on all counts, second degree manslaughter, third degree murder, second degree unintentional murder.
Well, and I think one of the things was that all of the counts were unintentional. They did not have to prove intent. Were you surprised that they reached a verdict so quickly?
No. Because there was such clear video. Mm-hmm. And I think the prosecutors, there have been other trials, whether it's, police brutality or death in custody or something like that. There have been other trials where I feel like prosecutors have completely botched it, or the defense has done such a great job, if you could call it that, of planting reasonable doubt, creating reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, the prosecutors probably could have just shown that video and then rested their case because it was just so damning and so telling, and just with his actions, Chauvin's actions, so nonchalant with the hand in the pocket. And it just, I really feel like, because I was talking with somebody just before we came on, and they're like, what's your prediction? And I said, I really think it's going to be guilty on at least the most serious charge, if not everything.
Yeah, no, I agree. What's happening in Minnesota, though? I've seen so much going on there. It'll be interesting to see what happens now. I think some people are saying there are going to be riots no matter what the verdicts are. And I hope that isn't the case. But I mean, when was the last time you were waiting on a verdict like this?
I've heard it on Twitter compared to the OJ verdict. Really?
Right. Exactly. Absolutely. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Do you need to go or take that?
No.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So I'm scrolling through Twitter a little bit just to make sure that we're not missing anything. But yeah, it's guilty on all three counts.
I wonder, do you think that because of social media and because everyone is a journalist these days, if you got a phone, if that changes the lawyer's job on how they present their case, how they have to approach it, because everything is so out there. Everything is so transparent. We've seen everything.
I really do. Yeah. And I think in some cases it makes it harder because in this particular case, if you're Chauvin's defense attorney, how do you explain that?
Right.
How do you, and if you're a prosecutor, do you just rely on the video? Like I was suggesting a couple of minutes ago, because I went to law school and passed the bar, but do you just rely on that? Or do you go about this case as if there was no video and try to present the strongest case possible? And oh, by the way, all of what I've been talking about and convinced you of happens to be on video. Here it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's case by case. It's story by story. I do want to go back to the learning curve. I mean, you talked about kind of the learning curve from the content of your podcast. What about the learning curve for the actual production of the podcast and voiceovers? Yeah, I see just in the background, you've got some sound dampening,
I actually had a voice booth and I finally removed it because we're moving stuff around.
Yeah.
I loved, because I didn't realize I was such a nerd this way. I loved figuring out what really works and what doesn't. Like those egg carton, like actual egg carton, those really don't work. I loved researching how to, there's no such thing as soundproofing either, right? You can treat a room. And you're talking, I was asking you what kind of equipment do you have?
Right. Oh my. Next time on Consenting Adults. What kind of equipment did
Aaron
you pack?
I just got the Rodecaster Pro too. And of course I'm loving it.
Yes.
But in the beginning, when I first started, I didn't want to spend a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
I was piecemealing stuff by just buying stuff that I found great deals on it. And I made it work. I was working with an analog mixer up until just a couple of weeks ago. And I love it. But I love editing. I love, maybe because I felt like I was kind of losing control of the creative process in my job. I found that just to be the most, like, I'm hungry again. I love editing. I love listening for, like, I will edit out every little click, every little sound, and I'm having so much fun doing it. Like if you get to a point in your life when you're like, you're not learning anything anymore, I think it's a problem. So at 51, I'm learning these things and oh my gosh, I'm really enjoying myself.
Yeah. In the 4 months I've been doing the podcast, it went just from, okay, let's post the first three episodes and let them live where they're going to live, And since then I've, for those episodes, I have created like audio videos, if that uh-huh. makes sense, where it's just a still photo and you've got the audio running underneath it. And that's because that's what I used to do a couple of years ago to promote the podcast. But now with Zoom, I can just record this, pop it onto IG, pop it onto YouTube. I don't do the whole episode because quite frankly, nobody wants to see an hour of me. Nobody wants to see an hour of me doing hums and ha's and ha, Because I would have to edit that video down a lot. I don't like a lot of my ums and ahs and stops and starts. So for the podcast, I edit a lot of those out. Mm-hmm. But by and large, yeah, I don't. If it's an hour podcast, it maybe gets down to 55 or 56 minutes, give or take. But I try not to edit too much. But the video, I'd probably want to edit that quite a bit.
Right. But then see, you're talking to people who, you're interviewing people who are used to talking.
Yes.
Which is a lot yes. different than talking to someone who might be a little bit nervous about telling me that they like seeing their husband with another woman. And sometimes they like seeing their husband with another man, that kind of, you know, and so when they talk, it's different. Sometimes it's like really pulling teeth to actually get them. I'm like, are you sure you're in the lifestyle? Cause this is kind of boring, you know, to get them to open up to me.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I hate, like I'm still very, like conscious of not pushing things or endorsing things. I'm going to tell you something, and I don't know. So you record on Zoom.
Right.
You know what has been a lifesaver for me? And it's free. Zencaster
also, yes. I don't use it personally, but we use it at school. Yes.
So, you know, it records separate tracks, which is yes. great. Some people speak louder. Some people, you know, make lots of mouth noises or whatever. And so that's been great. But those audiograms, do you use Headliner?
I use Headliner.
Yeah.
I use Canva also. Oh. And Canva is actually something that I learned through school. I was assigned a class to teach that included teaching graphic design. And Canva is super easy to use. Huh. Like I actually like using it more than Headliner. But Headliner gives me a little bit more flexibility with titles and, you know, animated graphics and things like that. But Canva is actually my go-to right now.
Oh,
I use that more than anything else. Just Canva with it's like canvas without the S, canva.com. Okay. I use that. I like that. And just again, because we're nerding out and you'll appreciate this, you know, it's probably between the two of us, we've probably gotten maybe 40 to 50 years of news experience between us.
How old are you?
I'm 44.
Well, you're young.
So I've got about 22 years of experience.
Okay. So I have 26
in news. Okay. Yeah. So, 48 years. I'm going to edit that out. But, for the first time in a long time, I actually forgot to hit record on the Rodecaster. So Zoom is recording. I'll grab that. That's no problem. It's a little bit less. The fidelity is a little bit less, but so be it.
Right.
But for the first time in a long time, I actually stopped up until 13 minutes ago. I was not recording on the Rodecaster. I looked over. It wasn't moving. It's like, all right, well, boop, hit record.
Yeah. So I still got stickers. I'm kind of like did your parents ever, when you grew up, like had plastic stuff that they're not going to tear it off until it like disintegrates?
I bought a car in 07.
So the stickers on the inside?
We gave it to my brother-in-law in maybe 2015, I think. And the plastic was still on the gear shift.
Yes.
It was still on the gear shift 8 years later.
So I'm one of those people too.
Yep.
My Rodecaster still has a little thingy on there that, and then sometimes, I don't know if have you like been reselling your stuff at all? And any stuff, whether it's just anything.
Not yet. And I'm glad I didn't, because I needed a tripod in the last 24 hours. And I had an extra one from this, you know, this light and green screen kit I had. And so, no, I don't know that I'll be selling anything anytime soon.
Okay. But like furniture, anything in the house.
Oh, yes. You meant like studio equipment. Yes. Yes.
Both. So I'm the person where I keep boxes of everything too. So like if I needed to sell my mixer,
yes,
it still looks brand new and I got the box. And I got the manuals. I'm just one of those people.
I almost bought this. So I use the SM7B from Shure as my microphone. I almost bought a used one off of OfferUp. I think they were selling two. And I just, you know, it was like $60 less for those two than the one new down the street here in Santa Clarita. at Impulse Music, and I said they're not a sponsor yet, Impulse, if you're listening. But I said, you know what? I'm just going to invest. I don't want to drop $300 on two used microphones. They might work for the next 20 minutes, and then I get home, right. You know. And right. But it's an investment. Mm-hmm. These things around you are an investment. I have to keep reminding myself I'm not going on a spending spree. I am investing.
Yep.
At least that's what I tell myself, right?
Yep.
At least that's what
good.
I tell myself. Mm-hmm. I was gonna bring up one thing. Oh, so getting back to the newsroom, not working in the newsroom, but hearing from people you used to work with who've heard your new podcast, who've actually joined you on the podcast. I think Elsa Ramon, among them. Talk about the types of comments you've gotten or reaction or conversations you've had with people you used to work with.
I think they're jealous. I think they're jealous because, and you know, you'll know this, and certainly anyone who's gotten out of TV news, being able to ask whatever you want to ask, talking in your own words, there's just this freedom. There's just this, I don't know what it is. It's just, I feel like I'm finally me. Not that I wasn't when I was a news anchor. That was me too. But the freedom of being able to talk about things that you want to talk about, asking questions you want to ask, right? And reacting the way you would normally react. No fake anchor banter, no fake laughter if it's not funny, or you know what I mean? That I think they're jealous. They're like, oh my God, you seem to be like having so much fun. And I am. And I think that, you know, Elsa and I, we like to call ourselves TV news survivors because it is such an interesting industry. And being on the other side of it now and being able to enjoy life and not miss it. Now, there are people who that is them. That's their identity, right? So like they were once the main anchor and after 20 years, they can't leave it. So they'll be the freelance weekend person or whatever it is. Like, I don't see myself there. Like I'm okay getting out, you know, I don't need that. And I'm having fun finding other things. So a lot of them are jealous that I'm able to do the things that I want to do.
How did you not let that become your identity? You know, TV news anchor and reporter. How did you let that not become your identity? Or if you did, how did you break that?
Well, I think, there's a part of me that's always that. Like, Aaron, I was a paranoid person from the time I was young. I knew I wanted to get in this business. So I did things like there's no ex-boyfriend who has a handwritten card from me. There are no pictures. You're not ever going to find a sex tape or anything like that because I was that careful about protecting my reputation. And this was long before the days of social media. So I was always that kind of person. I still don't express my political views. I spent so long not, and I enjoy that, you know, and I still don't, even though I'm not in TV news anymore, but I prefer not to, and that's the way I am. But I think that there are just either, it's just something that's within your personality. I always thought my guy friends would be like, hey, can you introduce me to some of your girlfriends at work? I'm like, why would I do that to you? It's like, I often thought, maybe I don't belong here. I'm like one of the more normal thinking people. I don't, you know, like that would, my life wasn't being the girl on TV. It was a job and a career, but I never did that. You don't know who I am. I'm not that person. And I don't ever want to be that person. And unfortunately, there's so many people like that in our business that, you know, it's, they walk around with, and it is a badge. I was proud of my career. We are so lucky to have done what we did, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't have chosen anything else, but I am perfectly happy not in it anymore. And so it's an evolution that I think that most people go through, and I'm happy.
how were things at home, because now all of a sudden you're home all the time. You're home for bedtime. You're home for dinner. How was that adjustment with your marriage and kids?
My kids, they loved it. I always get emotional because they're like, "Oh, mom, it's really nice to have you home." And that's just, people don't understand. I worked nights for my entire career. So from 2:30 to 10:30, I was gone. I didn't put them down to sleep. You know, like on weekends, I loved cooking dinner because I wanted to do that for my family and I wasn't there. I missed out on a lot. So like the first few weeks I was home to hear my tween kids say, "It's really nice to have you home." I just felt like, oh, this is, why didn't I do this sooner? And so, you know, we make a lot of sacrifices being in this business. I'm just happy that it wasn't so long that I look back and say, oh God, I wish I didn't miss that. So now they're, you know, going into high school, in middle school, about to go into high school. I couldn't have missed this time. And so, you know, at first I thought, oh, maybe they're going to hate it. They're going to be like, oh my God, she's always going to be on my back.
That's what I was thinking. Like, right? Oh, great. Tweens, right. getting mommy home all the time.
But they're enjoying it. And so I'm just lucky. And like when COVID happened and we all had to stay home, my husband's working out from, you know, the bottom floor of the house and I am loving it. My kids are thriving. They're doing so well in school because I'm always checking up on them.
Yep. Yep.
So it's been good for us. And I know that it hasn't been good for everybody. And so sometimes I don't, you know, people say, "Hey, how's it going?" I kind of feel whatever about telling them how great it's been because I know it's not been great for a lot of people. But for us, it's been awesome.
Lena, thank you for this. I really, really appreciate it.
I am so glad to hear your voice back on the air, I'll tell you that.
You can watch this episode on YouTube and DB&A TV. Follow the Aaron Bender podcast on your favorite platforms and link to it at aaronbender.com. That's also where you can find all my social media. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.